Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. The show is brought to you by our generous patrons at patreon.com/falloutlorecast.
Robots Radio presents
the Fallout Lorecast.
Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, a place for the Fallout community to come together to explore the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. Vault Dwellers, Wastelanders, welcome back to the Fallout Lorecast. This is your source for everything having to do with Fallout. And I'm your host, Tom, or Robots. And normally I'd say I'm here with my co-host, Lainey, or Neos Pandora. But if you listen to last week's episode, she has moved on to video editing and recently has launched our first lore video. It is up now on the Robots. Well, actually, no, it's up on the Fallout Lorecast YouTube channel because we've now split everything out to their own channels. So go look up the Fallout Lorecast YouTube channel for our first lore video. It's based on the lore section of the first episode of this podcast with all new actual video footage edited by Lainey herself. It looks awesome. We've been getting some very, very positive responses to that video. Go check it out. And if you want to do us a favor to help that get that channel growing, please go watch the video, watch it all the way through, give it a like, give it a share, comment on it. YouTube doesn't know what to do with new videos and new channels until enough people actually watch the video. So please go check it out. But she did an awesome job, and you know, comment on there and tell her she did an awesome job. She would love to hear it. But we're back with a new episode. And when I say we, I mean me and my guest host for today's episode, Dave Chaffins. Lainey 2. Lainey 2. Also known as Dave Chaffins from West Virginia and the internet and the Starfield Lorecast, my co-host from the Starfield Lorecast. Welcome back, Dave Chaffins. You've been on the show before. People might remember you from some episodes. How you doing, buddy? Also, the Fallout Hub. Man, we do so many things together.
We're holding hands constantly. Like people may start wondering, people may start suspecting something. We're both married men, so we need to, you know, we need to chill out maybe sometime.
There was a time, and there are cultures where it's okay for married men to hold hands and skip through the fields, you know, the lilies and things. That's okay. It's totally fine.
It's all good and dandy. But I've been doing well, man. I'm glad to be back on. And this time not strangely talking about Mothman. This is like,
yeah,
normally when it's kind of like a Ghostbusters, like when there's a ghost you call Ghostbusters, it's like when Tom wants to talk about a Mothman, he calls me. But we're not talking about that today, so maybe I'm good for other things. Who knows?
Well, we're gonna find out. This is the challenge here, is are you good for anything other than Mothman?
Yes. So I like it.
So we're starting a new series for the show because we're moving on from some of the stuff we were doing before. We're going to put some of the Fallout New Vegas lore on hold. There's plenty of more lore to talk about with New Vegas. Heck, there's plenty of more lore to talk about from any of the Fallout games, but that stuff will come. The time will come to talk about that stuff because it's nearing the end of the year, and I want to piggyback on one of the coolest series that came out this year, Marvel's What If series. If you watched the What If series, you might have enjoyed it. It was a concept where they took and they animated some ideas around what if some of the concepts around the Marvel movies were changed around a little bit. What if there was an alternate universe where things didn't happen the way we knew them to happen? And we're going to play with that concept today and in some of the future episodes of the show. And I hope you guys enjoy it. And I want you to go along with us on this mental journey, because there's a lot of significant points and significant things that happen in the story and in the lore of Fallout. One of them has to do with the vaults. And today's question is, what if the vaults were safe? And we're gonna play with this concept a little bit. We're gonna take it and move it around. There's different ways to interpret this, but we're gonna start out with this idea that what if the vaults were safe? And as we know, in the world of Fallout, the vaults are designed as experiments. And oftentimes, the people who are being experimented on one, don't know that they're being experimented on, and two, the experiments aren't particularly safe for those people who are being experimented on. And three, oftentimes, even the overseers, the people who know what is going on, it's not even necessarily safe for them either. There are nefarious things afoot in the vaults. So, Dave, I've got some things to I've got some ideas here about what would happen in the world of Fallout from the point of the Great War on, over the next 100, 200 years where the games take place, if we had an end of the world, a wasteland where we have a bunch of vault dwellers that went into a bunch of vaults and they ended up in a safe situation. So I know you have some thoughts on this. I'm going to let you go ahead and open this up. What is one of your first thoughts about this scenario?
My first question, and it's more like a caveat, I would say, is who is going into the vaults?
Right.
Like in a safe scenario where there's like no experience, like obviously, you know, for the vaults where it's like, we're going to do 99 women and one man, or, you know, they're looking for particular types for certain things. But if they're all just safe and there's nothing weird going on, how would they, like, what's their stipulation for putting people into vaults?
Right. Well, so we could play through this scenario in a few different ways. One could be that there are no experiments happening in the vaults. That would be 100% safe, right? A second scenario would be that experiments are still happening in the vaults, but they're only happening with the expressed approval of those people being experimented on. That there's no surprises. The people who are being experimented on are going into those situations 100% knowingly. They know what they're going into. They know they're signing off on it. Just like any, like, ethically moral experiment in today's society. You go to the university, they give you a paper, it explains exactly what's going to be happening, what things you're going to be aware of, what things you're not going to be aware of, you're signing off on it, and you know that in the end that they will call off the experiment if ever anyone's safety is in question. Right. Mm-hmm. So in a scenario like you're explaining here, like with the, you know, 99 women and one man, there would be safety restraints in place. If ever any of the women or that man's safety was in danger, then the experiment would be called off. So they would have guards. They would have probably cameras. They would have the ability to, you know, basically watch over whatever was going on. And should any of the people in the experiment say, use a safe word or hit a button to say, I feel threatened in this moment, they would call off the experiment in that moment right then.
Right.
For whatever the duration of the experiment is. So in that scenario, it would be 100% safe. They could call off the experiment at any point.
I think that's a good point. And I think that I guess the thing that would initially, even before you start cracking open vaults at like after the war, whenever you start cracking open vaults, there's automatically an us and them mentality of people that go into the vaults and people that stay out. And you see that at the beginning of Fallout 4 with the Vault-Tec sales rep, right? Like he's like, hey, wait a second, I work for you all. Why can't I go in there?
Right.
I want to go in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, let me in. Let me in. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They won't let him in. So point one, I guess, is that it doesn't solve an us and them mentality. You still have the people who go into the vault and you still have the people who don't. So why don't we break this down? Let's go into like the most safe version of this would be that the vaults don't have any experiments at all. They are exactly what the public would expect them to be. They are homes underground that are safe from bombs. There is nothing else going on than just safe places to go. And based on the societies that you live on underground, when the society underground deems that it is safe to come back to the surface, then you can go back to the surface. It's as simple as that. How would world change? What would the events of, say, Fallout 1 or Fallout 3 or Fallout 4 or 76 be like if that was what was going on?
I think that if we're taking like a player character, like like if we're saying the play character from 4 or 3 or New Vegas or whatever, mm-hmm. Comes out, he's got his vault suit on and is starting to talk to people. People are going to automatically think that this is some rich guy. Like this is a guy that we have all been out here like surviving. We're like half of us are ghouls. Some people got taken by the super mutants. Other people are being kidnapped by raiders and what have you. And from that starting point, like in the games, like they're always curious. They're like, what kind of experiment did they do with you in the vault? Because everybody knows that the vaults were experiments. And so without that caveat, I think people are going to be way less trustful and have way less social capital with people that are vault dwellers after they open up.
Right. Do you think that the surface dwellers, the wasteland, we'll call them just wastelanders, would mm-hmm. see the vaults once? I mean, they would know, the people who are surviving would know that the vaults in that case are extremely valuable. I mean, there's that sense of like, oh, if you could find a vault and get into it, then you're going to be safe. But most of the time they can't. But as time goes by and more vault dwellers are showing back up on the surface and they aren't crazy and they aren't, you know, like coming out messed up, because over time they are. But in this case, they're not. They're well fed. They are basically psychologically well kept, in more likely than not. These are treasure troves. Chances are that the vaults themselves are better designed to survive because they're not designed for experiments. They're not lacking water like some of the vaults are, or lacking power and, you know, set to break down, or have all of a certain type of person and not enough of another type of person, or lacking engineers, or like, you know, whatever, have music repeating over and over again, or, you know, any of the weird experiments that are going on. So they are treasure troves of food and power and water and all sorts of things. On the surface, wouldn't the Wastelanders be like constantly seeking out vaults in order to get in or to take them for themselves?
That's a really good point, and it makes me wonder how vaults would assimilate into culture. Like, if I'm thinking about like points of resource, if you're opening up into a wasteland. And I've had a genuinely good experience. I've had a, like 5-star review on Yelp at the local vault. Right. I'm most likely going to continue to live in the vault, except be a part of society itself. It's almost like a big apartment complex, like in that aspect. Like if I'm somebody like that, I'm like, yeah. Like if Vault 76 opened and we're allowed to just live in it, like everyone would just live in Vault 70, like,
yeah,
everyone would just hang out because there are power, there's running water, there's a lot of resources there. And to me, like, I think that even though like Wastelanders would be looking for that stuff, I think that people with the vaults would have enough insight, at least into maybe sociology or economics, being like, hey, we've got to do this slowly over time. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, we're not just going to open the doors one day and we're all going to like pop out. It's like, we've got to take a few people at a time, figure out what, like set up some trading. Essentially, you're making your own town at that point. At least from my perspective, that's what I think would happen. I don't think that people would set off, and because a lot of people leave vaults and are like, yeah, that place sucked. I'm never going there again. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would assume that the vaults would then have their own means of creating food. I mean, often they have their own power sources. They have their own water purifications. They would probably have their own hydroponics food, you know, to be able to maintain that. Also, they would have their own engineers to maintain a vault for long periods of time and to pass down education to from generation to generation. One of the thoughts I had is that they would probably leave the vault. Let's say you're in a vault and you decide that you're not going to leave, or you're going to test leaving each generation. Maybe even every 10 years, you send scouts out into the world and they come back and they go, nope, still dangerous out there. Not worth heading out. And at 50 years later, nope, still dangerous out there. 100 years later. Yeah, still dangerous out there. Eventually, at what point do you start expanding the vault? At what point do you just start mining out more passages underground, and you create what is basically an ant farm community underground. You become dwarves, basically, and you start mining.
Hobbit hole.
You have like a hobbit hole community that takes whatever resources you can and starts building out using the engineering, and eventually you probably run out of extra space depending on the nature of the rocks and the materials you have to build, or the amount of power you have to grow. But if you have enough plants, you can just keep planting hydroponics. If you have enough water, you can just keep on using more water. But at some point you run out of resources, and then eventually you have to expand into the surface, or you have to limit the amount of children that you can have. That's the point where you have to expand onto the surface. Then all of a sudden you're dealing with people in dire circumstances who aren't afraid to take what you have. That's where you come across the raider gangs who are a threat. And that's where you come across like this dilemma of like, how do we expand on the surface? The next step I would start to consider is, do the vault dwellers, and many vaults are actually in fairly close proximity to each other. Like in an area like Boston, you have a number of vaults that are all within walking distance from each other, right? So do these communities start to work together in order to try to organize some way of revitalizing a larger outdoors community? Do they start trying to re-educate the outer world population? Do they, you know, like how does that work? And I guess the greater question is, in the outside world, you still have irradiated swaths of land. You still have mutated monsters. You still have factions that are trying to vie for power and don't care who they step on. I think the really big question here is, does the vault community actually have enough power amongst themselves to become their own faction in this type of Fallout world?
I think that's a great point. And I think that they all have shared experience. They all have the same amount of resources. If we look at, you know, you're talking about hobbit holes and dwarves that live in mountains in like D&D and like Lord of the Rings, like they all stay in their mountains and come down if they need something. But generally they come down in a pack and they're pretty fortified whenever they do.
Right.
I think if the vault people that are in the vault tech vaults all got together and decided, okay, we're all going to look out for each other. We're going to do, you know, help each other out in certain ways and send, you know, convoys of, you know, people. I think that you have like a faction that could rival the Enclave or Brotherhood of Steel very easily.
Yeah. Or even underground passages. Like, couldn't they mine out underground passages from one vault to the next? Theoretically.
That's true. Yeah, they could. They could.
Yeah. And then you could have this entire network of vaults underneath, say, Boston, where each of those vaults is like communicating with each other because they're secure enough in themselves and because they're not all messed up. You know, they're not all reeling with the inability to manage themselves, theoretically. Now, some of them aren't going to be perfect. Some of them are going to have bad leadership. Some of them are going to fall apart from inside. But even if 50% of them work out pretty well, you could have an organized system where they can unite together and work together, theoretically. Because you don't have a system where they are all in dire need of resources, where they're all competing with each other. And that's usually where humanity falls apart, or at least it does in this series, is where everybody's vying for the same resources.
Another question that I kind of had was, how would this affect other factions? If Vault-Tec's not like lying and doing these experiments and doing this kind of thing that further engenders distrust, if people come out of that system, Wastelanders realize, hey, you know what? These people are pretty good. They're like, they've got their stuff together. They have followed a plan set by the standards and they're rolling with it. Are there going to be people more interested in like a group like the Enclave or the Brotherhood of Steel? Like, are those going to get more, you know, are their view numbers going to go up because they are associated with the government and with these like very strict rule systems and resources?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, would the Brotherhood feel like they have some claim on the vault as technology? Or would the Enclave feel like they have some claim on the vault's society as an outgrowth of a system that was created by the U.S. government in the past. And right. so they have some claim on them.
The Brotherhood or Enclave would be very happy with the Vault Dwellers and would not. If they were a faction, they would hate each other. Like they could not coexist.
Right. And here's another question. J-Bob in chat says history has taught us that people will always fight for resources. Would each of the vaults have their own identity separate from each other? Or would they see each other as more similar, as we are vault dwellers together, and see each other as the same group and unite against everyone else who's different? Like, imagine the Enclave or the Brotherhood starts knocking on all their doors. Do they then unite against that common foe? Or raiders start knocking on all their doors. They start uniting against that common foe. That could be a thing as well. I think that's an interesting question. And then there's the whole question of, like, at what point do they start running out of resources, and now they have to deal with the wilds of the surface, of the monsters on the surface, and everything having to do with that, you know. And they have less experience than the Wastelanders on the surface. So what kinds of deals do they broker with people on the surface to be their guides or to educate them? And, like, how do you take down a Deathclaw? What do you do when, you know, mole rats start digging into your tunnels that you're trying to connect your vaults with, you know, like, because you haven't done that before. Like, maybe the mole rats don't get into your vault itself, but once you start digging tunnels through the rock, the mole rats start getting in, you know. What do you do about that?
Yeah, I think it goes back to that, like, the vault dwellers would share a common experience, but it would not be common with your regular Wastelanders, like, you know, let's say, like, the residents of Diamond City or whatever. Like, they are going through their own problems and issues and different stuff, and it's like, what if a Brotherhood soldier walked in the middle of Diamond City? Everybody would be like, hey, that guy's weird. what's he doing here? And how can we get rid of them? Because we don't really want that.
And how do you get such cool hair? They always have cool hair and a cool jacket. Where do you get the cool jacket from?
I know. He went to the Coats R Us store. Texas Super Duper Mart.
Yeah, where do you get the cool jacket from? Well, I've got another question for you, but we need to take a break and thank our patrons, so we'll be right back.
Hello there, old chap. Good to see another of General Atomic's finest, still eager to serve.
Hey, Simone.
Yes, Chad.
What would you say is your favorite bad movie?
Oh, where would I start? But probably at Zombie Strippers.
Oh yeah, which we've actually done on our podcast, Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast. This is a podcast where we take some of the worst movies ever created, and even some of those movies that you might have thought were brilliant, but still got a bad critic score, and we say nice things about them. Because you know what? Someone put the effort in, so we're gonna be there, fighting in their corner.
Absolutely, Chad. Even if the movie was total garbage, there is some makeup artist that gave it their all, and we're here to recognize that.
Exactly. And with really fun themes every week, such as National Treasure Week, Weddings Week, movies with Jeremy Irons and dragons in them. How could you go wrong by joining us every Tuesday and Thursday for some optimism in your life?
And like we say at the end of every episode, we love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
We love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Goodbye.
All right, so here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons. Thank you to all of our patrons. You guys are amazing. We have a brand new patron to call out this week. Leonard, maybe, or Leonhard. I don't know how to pronounce your name. M. I probably butchered it. I apologize for that. Welcome to the Patreon. Thank you for joining us. And Ryan T, if I didn't call you out last week, welcome to the Patreon as well. Thank you for being here. You guys are amazing. And especially big thank you to our Liberty Prime, our Liberty Pie Man, Jared B, and also to our Sentry Bots, Southern Rage, and Stagger and Stumble. Thank you to all of you guys for helping to support the show. You guys are amazing. And all of our other 52 patrons, you guys are nuts. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And if we've done anything to help you get through your workday, your commute, your workout, or planning how you're going to manage all of those awkward conversations with your family this Thanksgiving, then check out patreon.com/falloutlorecast and check out all the different tiers, like, you know, tier 4, where you get merch, t-shirts and stuff, or maybe even just tier 1 or 2, where you get ad-free episodes and episodes early, or, you know, some of the higher tiers, where you get call outs every week and get join us on future episodes of the podcast. Speaking of future episodes of the podcast, the end of the week or end of the month chat episode will be coming up on the 30th, Tuesday, the 30th at 9 p.m. Eastern, our end of the month chat. So let's be talking about that on the Discord, what you guys want to talk about coming up very soon. So just two episodes away. We'll see you guys in a little bit for that. And we also have a brand new review. This is a real good one here. We have, actually, did I read Beelzebub's review last week? I don't think I did, because Lainey and I were so busy. Did I read this one from you, Beelzebub? Gandhi's Gonads. This is Beelzebub's. Beelzebub is one of our regulars in chat. That's his, that's his Apple podcast name. Message from the Waste, 5 stars. In a world filled with pesky raiders and feral ghouls emerges one man from the vault to give us the podcast to help us crawl out from the fallout. The show takes the meat and potatoes of the backstory and really compresses it into bite-sized pieces to carry with you through the wasteland. Fun, informative, clear, and concise. Robots with zeros, thank you, Beelzebub, will aid you across the wasteland and teach us the boundaries of our knowledge and self, as well as the Fallout universe. And his name isn't Captain Danger Robots. I'm so sorry. Or his name isn't Captain Danger Robots. I always look forward to your streams, podcasts, and content in general. Thank you for being a contributing factor to making the day great. You help reset my brain and are actually great for my general mental health. Oh, that's awesome, dude. Thank you for such great content and being a general great human being, man. I know it may not mean much, but I consider you a friend, mentor, and all-around stand-up gentleman. I look forward to taking in more content in the future. Thank you for taking time out of your day to respond to me and so many of us out there. See you in the waste. Beelzebub 88. Bub, super nice comments, dude. Thank you so much for that and for taking the time to leave the review on Apple Podcasts. That's awesome, dude. And then we have, you guys are leaving really long reviews. Thank you so much for these. We have Kilted Stag in Great Britain, who wrote in and left a review on Apple Podcasts and says, just as important as a Pip-Boy, 5 stars, only found this podcast 2 weeks ago on Spotify and haven't fully caught up yet. Haven't fully caught up yet. We've got like 170 something episodes. Holy crap, in 2 weeks, man. But I'm 123 episodes in. Holy moly, chewing through those episodes. That's amazing. But I had to set up an iTunes account just to review it so others can find it. Dude, that's awesome. So thank you so much. So where do I begin? Robots with Zeros is an amazing host, extremely knowledgeable, and with his smooth voice, which must be level 15 charisma. Holy crap. Will take you away into the wasteland as if he was a tour guide and explain everything there is to know about Fallout and its lore. You can tell how much work and passion has been put into every episode, and he will even make you think about how you would react to certain things personally if it was you and not your character, which I love. This podcast is a must listen or watch for any Fallout fan. Dare I say it's just as important as a Pip-Boy? Yes, I dare too. It will help you through any bad day, through work, through your walk, or accept a use routine. I don't know what that means, but I'm just reading it as it says it. Or you can even listen to it instead of your Pip-Boy radio. The only thing I would change would be finding it sooner. So from the Highlands of Scotland, I thank you, robots, for this amazing podcast and the network. I can't wait to see where it goes in the future. You deserve way more than 5 stars. Dude, I wish I could do a really good Scottish accent and read it that way, but I can't, and it would just mangle it up. But thank you so much, Kilted Stag. That is awesome, guys. Thank you so much for those. And these really, really do help get more attention to the show. So very, very appreciated. And thank you to all of our patrons. You guys are awesome. All right, we've got more stuff to talk about with this What If episode. So here we go.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
All right, so let's take on the other scenario. Dave, what do you think would happen if they did have the experiments, similar experiments, or maybe even the same exact experiments going on in these vaults, but they were safe and the participants understood the ramifications of what was going on? They volunteered for them. There were clear boundaries. These were not like surprise experiments. And they actually got real data, and the experiments didn't fall apart. They were able to go on, like nobody rebelled, nothing weird happened, nothing broke down. would we end up with an actually more informed, more scientifically literate, more, I don't know, capable wasteland in the end?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've been looking through during the break, the experiments for the different vaults. I pulled them up here, and I'm trying to think about if there was an experiment that like promoted, like that even if they, you know, this is in a what if scenario. So
sure,
these experiments all failed, but was there anything that even though it failed, it ended up being a really good outcome? And I didn't see much of anything. But there's some vaults that are like, oh, we're, you know, like the one in Fallout New Vegas that has all the plant monsters in there. Like they were looking into, wasn't it like, it was like plants that didn't need sunlight in Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah.
And like that kind of
more food,
right? You would then have that effect on the world itself.
Right. More food. What about like the cloning experiments?
Right. Yeah. The cloning experiments, Stradivarius Fromm that was in the VR, little egg pods. Like would people just be living in the egg pods? Like, oh, come on in. We've got more egg pods for people. Come in here and be in, you know,
maybe join
Mark Zuckerberg in the metaverse.
But like, imagine if people were going into these VR situations and able to test scenarios safely in a VR situation, then they could be testing out ways to, say, take on creatures that would be too dangerous to fight, or designing weapons without necessarily needing the resources available for them in that situation. You know, there's a lot of things you could be testing in a in a VR environment, theoretically, without necessarily needing the resources to do it in the real world, and then getting the resources once you've thoroughly tested it. Assuming that they have the engineering and the coding to make it as realistic as possible, right? So, but
if you're doing like the Mars experiment, that like people will go out in the desert and seal themselves off and be like, okay, we're gonna act like we're on a Mars colony, and for a month we're just gonna live out here and wear the spacesuits and make our own food like we're living on Mars. I think that you would be more likely to have that stuff in the years after the vaults close if they were to, you know, okay, this is the experiment, we're gonna run people through like survival training, let's do combat training. Yeah. Like they have all the like. From the broken, not broken steel, but the one where they go to Alaska and Fallout 3.
Yes, I know.
Operation Anchorage.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Like that is like essentially like a Call of Duty game within Fallout 3, but that's also combat training for people that,
right,
oh, I can go in there and do this thing and it's no big deal.
Right.
Like I can just shoot people and figure out how to work a gun and figure out like what's a tactical maneuver for this kind of stuff. That way, if you're going out into the world, you are way more informed from a, you know, not necessarily 100% practical perspective, but probably the best that you can do.
Well, so an informational perspective, tactically with your mind, you could be trained into how to, like, what if the vault factions' armies were actually more mentally trained for combat against the things in the wastelands? And like you said, when the dwarven hordes came down from their mountains, they were actually very formidable because, one, they were armed with pre-war weapons that still worked because they kept them in good condition in their vaults. The engineers kept them working. And then they were also trained tactically and prepared because they were in VR situations where they got to train themselves mentally with how to move in formation, how to not injure each other or shoot people who were on the same side. You know, like weapons can be very dangerous. If you've ever gone to a gun range and you've shot a gun, like you actually have to practice doing it. It's not like Call of Duty where you just point and shoot. Like guns require training. They there's a lot of kickback in it. They hurt. Like the amount of kickback a gun has in your hand is physically exhausting when you shoot it regularly. You have to reload. There's coordination involved. There's a lot to wielding a weapon.
Right.
And then being able to do that in a VR situation at least mitigates some of that training. It's not all of it, but there's some of the mental side of that training gets reduced. But what about the cloning stuff? What about the need for protein? If you can clone Brahmin in the wasteland, then all of a sudden you have enough protein to feed everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, and you don't need to clone Gary anymore. You're not going to have Gary running around, but you get a bunch of Brahmin running around. It doesn't matter if they're all the same, you know, Betty the Brahmin.
Right.
Over and over again.
And like, even if you're cloning Gary, like, what if you've like deduced a like super soldier kind of situation, and essentially you have Vault Stormtroopers that it's like Star Wars and it's like Attack of the Clones. It's like, all right, you know what? These guys are our infinite army that we can just like power up whenever we want to
send against the super mutants.
The army of Gary's. That's episode Gary, 2. Attack of the Gary's.
Gary. Oh man, somebody needs to make a Gary combat mod where they're all like weaponized and you can send them against enemies, and they only follow like attack or like run away. Like those are the two. It's not retreat. It's like run away in a Monty Python run away. Film. Run away, yes. And they all go Gary, and then they run away.
Yeah, I think that there's some experiments that would be interesting to see be like done and not have like the weirdness of like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, cosplay as a little girl that also is trying to kill everyone in the simulation. Sure. Like if you were to go into those and say, okay, this is a thing. But there's other experiments like where they had to sacrifice somebody every year, and that was just the experiment of it.
Yeah.
That there's no way that to walk away from that and be like, you know, that was a great time. We all had fun. We all just, right. That was a pleasant experience.
Yeah, that was more of a psychological, you would find out psychological. And I guess you could end the experiment like at the decision before they actually have to follow through with it, and mm-hmm. then take another group and like subsection the groups. And there's ways of doing that safely, but you would quickly learn some things about humanity that might change the way that you organize your government structure. That might change things.
Yeah, now that you put it that way, it's like a reality show. Like at the end of every week, somebody gets voted off of whatever it is.
Right. Yeah, and they disappear for the group, and maybe the group thinks they've been killed until the experiment's over.
It's like Survivor, and they get voted off and have to live on a separate island away from people, and then oh, surprise, they're back from the old island.
Oh, they're back. They're back in the vault. What do we do now? There's ways that you could, I think there are things that you could probably learn from each of these vaults, because each of them were designed around some specific thing they were trying to learn, and that knowledge could be used in ways that could be beneficial, potentially. Some vaults more than others. I guess the big question then is, assuming that the vaults are safe and they're acquiring all of this knowledge, they have better use of food, better use of weapons, better use of, heck, even some of the kits they have that like can grow food and
the Garden of Eden creation.
Yeah. The Gex. Like some of those were in vaults and ready to be used, and then they ended up like being misused or misplaced or destroyed, or you know, there's
somehow
lots of that.
Harold got a hold of one of those,
right?
And then that was old mass,
you know? Right? Like if those were better used, you end up with a system. The big question in the end is, if the vaults were safe 200 years later, could we have ended up with a wasteland that was rehabilitated? Would there have been zones in America where people were relatively safe? Could we have created like walled cities where people were living regular lives, repopulating, maybe keeping the mutants out, getting back to some semblance of a normal life? Would this have been a solution to get us back to that?
I think that's a great question, and it's hard not to get, you know, to think about the politics of it, because when I think about what are the big threats to Wastelanders out there, like of course there's ghouls and super mutants, but if you are a settler and you're trying to, you know, live in a ramshackle shack down by the Red Rocket Station, you're worried about raiders. And raiders are not a thing because of the vaults, they are a thing because of they're kind of like extremist capitalists at that point. Like these are people that are like, hey, we're out for us. We're out here to go. And, you know, we had a broken system of capitalism before all of this. Like that's even more so in Fallout, where, you know, in that whole world and what was going on before the bombs fell, that is a symptom of stuff. But like, that is not a symptom of the bombs falling. That is just an after effect of people are already in that mindset. Like, if you look at Fallout 76 with the Raider faction, how the Raiders started was they were up on a hill and they were like, hey, we need stuff to live because we're just up here at our ski resorts and we can't do anything. We don't have any resources up here. And so we need stuff from the lower cities like Charleston or Morgantown in Fallout 76. And so the Charleston and Morgantown people were like, yeah, we can't help you. You're too far away. And they're like, hey, you know what? Screw you. We'll just come and take it. Like that mentality isn't going away. So I don't think,
right.
I don't think that there would be a rehabilitation because you would still have issues. You would have definitely a more likable faction like the Minutemen. Like, essentially they're just like a real nice Brotherhood of Steel. Like, the Brotherhood of Steel can be a little weird sometimes and a little xenophobic. Uh-huh. They would end up being likable, like the Minutemen or the Railroad or the Responders. The city people, like the Diamond City people are perfect. Fine.
There's always
Rivet City people.
There are some groups that have more altruistic goals, right? And then there's always other groups that kind of ruin it for everybody. Like, it kind of goes back and forth.
Right.
And I think the other thing here is that, at least to me, it seems like there are enough urban areas with vaults in and around them across the United States, because the United States is a big place. There's a lot of urban centers. Every state has some urban center, if not two or three urban centers, that it's almost like a statistic problem, right? Given enough situations, a few of them would turn out okay. I think a few of them would turn out okay. Like, it's like planting seeds. And
yeah,
if you walked around in like rough earth that was not very well tilled ground, it's not great soil, and you spread enough seeds, a few of those seeds would still grow.
Yeah, some places are able to figure it out. And even if you look at the end of Fallout 4 or Fallout 3, depending on your choices, if you like sided with the Railroad or the Minutemen, where it was like, hey, we love everybody, we're trying to build a better place. Like, it would be interesting to go into the game like years later and say, okay, what effect did that have? How did that change? I destroyed the Synths, I destroyed the Brotherhood of Steel. Mm-hmm. I took down the Raiders. Like, we've got more technology, we've got more stuff going on. Like, how would that look years? Like, that would have a dramatic effect. There would be less conflict. Same thing for Fallout 3. If you've got a strong altruistic Brotherhood of Steel running DC, taking care of them all, and you kind of got that with the DLC that they did after, where they were like, we're setting up checkpoints and giving out free water and doing these kind of public access programs, and there's more Brotherhood of Steel members and generally more resources. Like, you can see an upward path that when people have the resources to do something, they're going to do it, whether it's good or bad. So I think that's a good point in the case of the vaults, where if they got their stuff together and right off the bat were like, hey, we're out there, we're going to try to improve the situation for ourselves, for these people, we're going to like slowly, if you know, all the boxes get ticked correctly, I think that you're right, that you could see some cities say, okay, you know what, this is a pretty safe, you know, it's not the safest place to live, but
sure,
darn tootin', it's pretty good.
Yeah, because, I mean, you see it with Vault 76. The Overseer very much wanted that to be the situation.
Right.
And then everything goes, you know, she leaves and she's like, oh, man, this is a mess. Mm-hmm. This is rough. We got to do what we can, but this is rough. And she's still trying to make things work out. And imagine if the other vaults in the area all left at the same time, if they were all set to, you know, evacuate after 25 years and meet at a certain spot and work together to try to revitalize the community together. That would be a completely different situation. She wouldn't be alone. She would have other people around her, and they would all have their resources and be able to pull together. And maybe they'd work together. Maybe they wouldn't. But if you multiply that across the country, and there are 100 of these communities across the country, some of them will work out. Just statistically speaking, a few of them will work out. That's my theory on it, at least.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, though, that reinforces the haves and the have-nots. And it's kind of like in zombie films and TV, like the more people you have in one place, the bigger the danger could possibly be.
Right. Well, because it could go bad. You know, you have, let's say you have, let's play that out. You have a community. Let's say West Virginia works out. Let's say, you know, they build a community at Charleston.
Right.
And Charleston is a nice community. And after a few years, they've got 2,000 people living there and they're working together. Well, that becomes a really tempting location for a bunch of raiders to get together and try to ransack, or a bunch of super mutants to try to ransack, because there's going to be a lot of resources there. And, you know, like, it's a safer place because of numbers, but it's also a much more tempting location to try to loot at the same time.
Yep. Yeah.
So
that's true.
It plays both ways. So, yeah, man. Well, that's as far as my questions go with it, and as far as my theories go on it. I think that if the vaults are safer, it's generally a better solution for the wasteland, but it also leads to other problems and difficulties as well. I think that it sets us up for kind of a mix of things, which creates a very different kind of Fallout experience.
Yeah. My last question is a personal question for you. Uh-huh. If you were in the kitchen and you were cooking up all the vaults and like the idea of the what if situation is they all open at the same time and all get together. Uh-huh. How far are you setting that ticker?
Well, is this like Fallout physics or is this like real world physics?
Fallout physics.
Okay. Sure. 'Cause in real world physics, the radiation doesn't last 200 years, right?
Right.
Like Nagasaki and those places, like the radiation went away fairly quickly. Right.
There's like super blooms and all that, like actual science behind it. But right. If you are,
you don't have to wait 100 years for the radiation to go away. But in Fallout world, radiation sticks around a long time. I think you have to look at it from the perspective of what they knew before the bombs dropped. And I would assume that the scientists would have known that the radiation was going to stick around a while. I don't think they knew that there was going to be a mutant problem. The people creating the vaults didn't know that the FEV was going to create like mutants across the wasteland. So they didn't know that was going to be a danger. But they probably could have predicted that there was going to be a scarcity of food and supplies and things like that. So you would have, you know, people wandering the wasteland, looking at the remnants, scavenging and fighting over stuff. So there would be some danger there. Mm-hmm. I think you probably would wait. I don't know that you wouldn't know how irradiated it would be. So I think you would probably wait about, I think 20, 25 years is probably pretty good, because you would want to have the people who went in still around to be able to pass on the knowledge to the younger people who are now adults, but still be around to direct them and let them know like where things are. Like this is the city where we live. This is a good zone to be. This is where you would want to go. This is where, you know, crops used to grow. And so hopefully the crops and land is still good. Or, you know, this is a industrial area. So you're going to be able to find good resources here for steel or lumber. You know, like you're
that
not going to
wait. Knowledge is invaluable. Yeah, I understand.
You're not going to want to wait 100 years into the future, because that kind of knowledge, unless you wrote it all down and then, but even then, you know, 4 generations in the future, they're going to have to like look all that stuff up and try to figure out what's going on. And who knows after 100 years, what the world has changed. Like what have the people on the surface done to all of that material?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like the problem with Moira's Wasteland Survival Guide. Like people could, like you give her the information based off your choices, but I mean, you could give her like some like weird stuff about like, no, landmines are perfectly fine. You just step on them and it makes a little sound that says that was easy.
Right. Like, You wait 100 years and there's so much that you've lost by that point. I think you need to do it within a generation. I think that the Vault 76 concept makes a lot of sense in that regard.
Yeah.
And if you come out and you open up that vault door and you look out and everything looks absolutely terrible, you lock it back up again and you go, nope.
Yep.
We're going back in.
It's kind of like when you're baking something in the oven, you open up the oven and see, oh, it's not done yet. All right. Put it back in.
Five more minutes. All right. Here we go.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what you do. Well, I would love to hear our listeners' thoughts on this concept. What would happen if the vaults were safe? Feel free to log into the Robots Radio Discord. Look for the Fallout Lorecast channel and give me your thoughts. If we didn't cover something that you think was obvious and you want to yell at us and be like, oh, my God. Tom, Dave, how did you miss this concept? It would totally be like this. Let us know. Or if you've got some crazy idea of what you think would happen, we would love to hear it. We'll respond to you on there. Also, you can always shoot us a message on Twitter at the Fallout Lorecast Twitter, at Fallout Lorecast, or at me, robots_radio, or at Dave Chaffins. I believe that's yours, right?
Yep.
Yep. And Dave, do you have anything else going on? Anything else you want to share before we head out?
We do the Fallout Hub sometimes. That happens. It's a Fallout community show that me and Mr. Robots Radio here and a good friend, Kenneth Figue, that runs Shadow Fallout 76 podcast, do. That's it's generally every 2 weeks. Sometimes it's every 3 weeks. Sometimes it's once a month. It's just a great time to pal around. And it's like three friends playing Fallout together. It's all nice and fun. And then me and Tom are kind of starting back up something here that I think you'd want to talk about for a little bit.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, we have the most recent episode of the Starfield Lorecast. It came out last week with some of the recent news that came out with all the Skyrim 10th anniversary hullabaloo with interviews with Mr. Todd Howard. He dropped some more information about Starfield and then some other stuff came out. So we're starting that back up. We're less than a year away from launch. So we're going to be getting more and more information about that. So we'll be doing, Dave and I do that podcast. So we'll be doing that more and more often as we get more info drops. And then we have a theory that we will get a bunch of info come E3. So June, which is only, what is that, 6 months, 7 months away at this point. So it's going to come hot and heavy once we get to summer.
Yep, we're doing appetizers right now, but once the main course comes, it's like main mm-hmm. course for years, and you'll just be eating, too busy eating your sausages to figure it out.
Absolutely.
Know?
This game is going to be huge. So if you love Bethesda games, if you love Fallout, Elder Scrolls, you're going to want to tune in to the Starfield Lorecast. So go ahead and subscribe to that on your podcatcher. Just pull it out right now. Stop the podcast right now. Just go open it up, look up Starfield Lorecast, hit the subscribe button. Make sure that you're following that because we're going to give you all the news. And then as the lore gets revealed for the game, as more information comes out for all the different planets and the factions and all that stuff, we're going to cover all of those details and get you guys all the info, and especially the barking dogs behind me. So they always bark when I do podcasts. And
part of it. It's part of living.
Yeah.
So dogs have to bark. Like I have the fire station, also known as the responders that drive by my house and do all the big sirens. So that's just
how it goes when you record out of your house. We're going to have all the information that you want for Starfield. This will be like the Starfield podcast. So make sure you tune in for that. And that's what we got going on. You know how to find all the podcasts, right? Robotsradio.net. All the stuff going on. We've got lots of cool stuff over on the Robots Radio YouTube channel where I've been streaming some Skyrim, except for because my brain decided to attack me this week with the worst migraine I've had in like months. So I haven't done much of that, but I've been releasing some mod videos for Skyrim. And then, of course, the Fallout Lorecast YouTube channel with the new video that Lainey edited together. So you should go check that out and help us grow that channel. We would really appreciate it. So reminder to go check that out. And Dave, thank you for joining me. This has been super fun, dude.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Anytime, my friend.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we'll have to have you back soon. And chat, thank you for being here in the live stream. And everybody, we will see you again next week. And until then, stay safe in the wasteland. And if you see a vault, remember that they aren't actually safe. They're very dangerous places. And if you hear somebody yelling, Gary, there's probably like 12 other guys right behind him. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Later. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Also, look up the Robots Radio YouTube for videos about Fallout and other things. And check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/robotsradio.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
Ahoy there, ye landlubbers! Avast! My name is Captain Logan, and I'll be your guide out on the Sea of Thieves. If you love the idea of stealing treasure, cutting down cursed skeletons, fighting off krakens, and raiding forts filled to the brim with shinies, then Sea of Thieves is the game for you. Join me each week as I dive into the news and bring back the nuggets of information that any sailor worth their weight in salt would desire. You don't have to be a pirate legend to gain access to my podcast. Just search for Keelhauled, a Sea of Thieves podcast in your podcast app of choice, or head over to robotsradio.net or captainlogan.podbeam.com and get ready to set sail for adventure. Arr.
Do you love the Mass Effect series, and are you looking to learn even more about Mass Effect? The things that you didn't even know that you didn't know? Well, this is your host, Tom, or Robots, and me and my co-host, N7 Legend, do a show called The Mass Effect Lorecast. It is available on whatever podcatcher you're listening to this right now. We also do it live on twitch.tv/robotsradio, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific on Sunday nights. So go look it up right now, The Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to have you join us.